There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beaten Track podcast. I'm your host, I'm Stu Whiffin. It's another week, therefore it's another episode. Today's episode, I get to sit down with Chrissy Boy from Madness, Chris Foreman, I should say his full name. And yeah, it was a real pleasure. I got to sit down with Bedders a year or so ago and talk through some of the stories from Madness with him and the records that were important to him. So it was lovely to get to speak to Chris, who was somebody kind of post-Madness. I spent a lot of time following the band he'd done with Lee Thompson around, the Nutty Boys, which we discussed because I had a few questions that I was intrigued to know about that period of his career. And we talk about everything. You know, we finish off discussing, what an event Madstock was and how that felt and how that come about and the subsequent, tours and stuff, bringing it right up to 2020 and what should have been happening and hopefully what can be happening in 2021. It's a lovely chat and Chris is an absolute diamond. You're going to really enjoy this episode. Before we get on with that, just a few thank yous. Thanks to Scroobius Pip and everybody at the Distraction Pieces Network. Thank you to 76 for producing this. And if this is your first time listening to Off the Beaten Track, and I'll suggest that once you get to the end of this episode, go and have a look in the archives, because you can access about 180 or so chats with some really great people, artists as diverse as, oh blimey, where to start? Bedders, I guess we can start with Bedders. Bedders through to the Deftones, through to Mel C, through to Chuck D from Public Enemy, through to actors such as Maxine Peake, Amanda Abington, through to comedians like James Acaster, Mick Talbot from the Style Council, Steve Craddock. There's go and have a look, because there's plenty of great chats to get cracking with. And and if that's not enough, and you want some more and you'd like to support the podcast, then I have a Patreon page to accompany it, and each week I put up four unique radio shows on there and some video episodes and unique episodes purely for Patreons only as well. So there's 4, 5, 6, 7 bits you get each week over there from as little as $1 a month. And this podcast is an absolute labour of love, so any kind of support from the Patreon is much appreciated. You can find out about all of this stuff at www.offthebeatandtrackpodcast.com. Right, back to business. Please enjoy Off the Beaten Track podcast with Chrissy Boy.
It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin.
Listen up. I've only got another new sponsor. Egg Fried. It's this super cool clothing label. And if you're into sort of skating and street art and gigging and kind of like really cool art and throwing a little bit of Asian culture and the designer's kind of weird sense of humour in the mix, then you're pretty much there with the wonderful world that is eggfried.com. Now, They do these amazing punchy kind of graphic tees, hoodies and sweatshirts, beautiful art prints, as well as this. They have a denim range, all handmade in-house, all supporting the slow fashion movement. Not only that, they've given you a discount code, 10% off when you head over to eggfried.com. Just use the code EGGSALAD, E-G-G-S-A-L-A-D, save 10%. Go and get lost in the world of Egg Fried. Also, they've got a new kids range, and it's called Small Fried, and it's super cool, super cute. And again, it's all over there in this wonderful world. Go and get involved at eggfried.com. Okay, we're recording, and sitting opposite me today via the means of Zoom is Chrissy Boy. Hello.
Hi, all right, Stu. How you doing?
Yeah, not too bad, not too bad. Chris, before we get on with the songs, we have to have the inevitable chat, which is, have you found the last six, 7 months?
I mean, you know, I've got a nice house, got a nice garden. You know, I've been able to go away a few times. But, you know, it does, you know, get you down. You know, we were supposed to do a show in March in Dubai. And I was thinking, oh, yeah, you know, a bit of sunshine. And the day we were supposed to go, the tour manager went, we're not going. So, yeah, I mean, the band, we haven't done anything since January together.
Yeah.
Seen, you know, some of them I hardly speak to. Lee came to see me, sax player. And we had a meeting at our accountants, of course. And, so we've kind of been in touch, but, you know. So, it's you know, I've got two kids. You know, one's 18, one's 14. So, yeah, they went a bit up the wall.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's been, yeah, difficult.
Okay. Well, should we talk about something that's a little bit more positive? Should we talk records? Yeah. Let's do that. All right, Chris, for track one, I'm going to ask you the song that you think's got the greatest ever intro.
Well, you know, I only sort of thought about this 20 minutes ago, you know, thinking, well, and I think, you know, the Supremes, Love Child.
Oh, what?
It's got that really, you know, I mean, you know, there's so many songs, and that is an incredible song. You know, it came out, I was doing all research, 1968, so I was 12, and it's a story, isn't it? It's like what they call a vignette. You know, it's a story about somebody who was, you know, what I think, an illegitimate child. And it's incredible, really.
How have you found, I always like to ask sort of musicians this question in regards to sort of intros. And with the greatest respect, you've been, you know, making music for, you know, a few decades now.
Yeah,
and I just want to know, because obviously when Madness first kind of, you know, started releasing records and stuff, the way that people listened to music was very, very different to how people listen to music now. And I just wondered, you know, over the years and you know, how it's evolved and more recently, I guess, with some of the more sort of recent Madness stuff and that, like, how have you kind of, has it affected the way that you know, you put your songs together, the fact that now things are far more sort of disposable and there's so many distractions in you know, with Spotify saying, no, you might like this, you know, and for me, Madness always struck me as a band that released an album as an album, as a piece of work, you know. I just wondered how, you know, how the changes in the industry have had any sort of effect on how you approach writing and stuff.
Well, yeah, when we started, it was like, you know, I might be at home on a guitar and I think of a few chords and I think, oh, they sound good, and I write them down, go to rehearsal with them on a bit of paper, you know, and then we'd all start getting a bit of a song together, you know, and then usually Suggs or Lee wrote a lot of the lyrics. So they would come and they'd literally go in with a cassette and then they'd come back, you know. And now, you know, all these years later, everyone's got a computer, you know, and I can do songs on that are extremely, you know, got guitar, got everything on that you want. So you have a more finished idea, you know. And sometimes we've even used that, the whole thing. But you know, I think we just, we've never tried to think, oh, we'll do a hip hop song. No, well, we have, but you know, they just kind of come out the way they come out.
Yeah.
You know, our management have sometimes tried to get us to be a bit more contemporary or to do stuff with other people, but it never really, you know, gels.
If it ain't broke, it don't need fixing, though, right?
Yeah. You know, and we like doing new stuff.
Yeah.
Obviously, this year, we haven't really been able to do a lot.
Okay. For track two, Chris, I'm going to ask you the first song you remember hearing that had an emotional impact on you.
Again, you know, this is like, so I just sort of thought, you know, I was like a kid. This came out in 1969. So I was 1966. I was 10, 13 or something. And it's Elvis Presley, In the Ghetto. And again, it's like another great song that's, you know, a story from beginning to end of somebody's life. And I remember I lived in this street and we're connected to a railway line, you know, at the end of the street. The houses used to shake. Yeah, and I was, you know, not getting the old violin out. We were quite poor. And I thought, oh, you know, I live in a ghetto. I mean, I don't know how I knew what a ghetto was, age 13. I probably asked my dad. But, you know, I remember kind of, you know, there's like that sort of song that, as well, I think, you know, I was playing in the street and somebody's playing it on the radio. You know, and it's an incredible song.
It's got really, really unique sort of sound to it. It's a dark sounding record, isn't it, In the Ghetto? It doesn't really sound like anything else Elvis done. I think it's quite sort of out there for an Elvis record. It's got a kind of strange sort of weight to it. It feels like quite a heavy sounding record. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, are you going to be playing these records?
I'll do a Spotify playlist to accompany the podcast so people can go and listen.
I understand.
To all the records that accompany it. Yeah. And so where was this? Where was home growing up?
I lived in this street called Mortimer Terrace. Right, it sounds very posh, doesn't it? And there's in Kentish Town, there's a place called Highgate Road, and there's a railway bridge, and there's a chip shop on the corner where it was, you know, and you go down this little road, which was called Wesleyan Place. You turn left, and there we were in this house, which was terraced houses. And we had the basement was all just scary. It was all damp, and there was old bikes. Do you know what I mean? There was a coal hole. And then we had this ground floor and a garden and this toilet, which everyone shared. And then we had the next floor was me and my brother had a bedroom, my parents' bedroom. And then above us was two more floors, you know, with these old women that kind of lived on their own. So, yeah, it was, you know, pretty, didn't have central heating, didn't have a bath, you know. I had a tin bath.
How was it growing up around Kentish Town, though?
Oh, you know, I don't know. It's a long time ago. But, you know, it was a world away from what it is now, you know. I mean, still, every now and then I go back. I've been living in Brighton for 14 years. I go back to the old area, you know, and it's a bit sad. You know, my brother still lives in that same house.
Oh, really?
We lived in one house, and the council eventually, you know, did them up and like put in. I remember my dad said, you know, I'm not going to move until I get the one on the corner. And it's like an Ealing comedy because.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus,
Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
You know, they had all scaffolding on, so we were the only people living there. And in fact, I was 20 and I got married, and I, you know, they were kind of, I was living on the top floor. I was like squatting, really, you know, me and my wife, you know, and we had a baby. So, yeah, it's quite a time. I got a council flat, you know, in that year, 1976. Oh.
And in and kind of just going back to the house when you was at home with your parents, was there records and stuff on, you know, was there music on at home?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'll turn my sound off. Oh, I have. But we had the sort of radio. Yeah, we had this little record player. You know, when I got a bit older, yeah, my dad got me a little record player, you know. So, yeah, it was, you know, but, I mean, it's crikey, like, yeah, when I was really little, we used to listen to Jimmy Clitheroe. I don't know if anyone's heard of Jimmy Clitheroe. The Clitheroe Kid, you know, flipping hilarious, actually. Yeah, so we used to do a lot of that, yeah. But, you know, I didn't really... My dad got me a Beatles album, which was a compilation album. That and the Rolling Stones, yeah, you know, and my first, you know, stuff that I used to play.
Did that resonate, what they were doing, like them bands?
Yeah, I mean, the Beatles were just incredible. You know, I mean, I was very young. But I used to think, how do they do it? How do they, you know, just keep coming up with these songs? I don't know when, I was just looking up when Sgt. Pepper's came out. Do you know when that came out?
Was it 66?
Yeah, you know, and BBC played it. They said, we're going to play it. You know, and this is before 67. 1967. I remember, you know, the BBC said, we're going to play the whole album. Because in those days, nobody could record it off the... You know what I mean? Like, these days, you would never do that. And I thought, this is incredible. So I was 11. But, you know, already, you know, just I just thought, this is... Again, you know, how did they do that?
Yeah. And they kept doing it as well, didn't they?
They kept doing it, yeah. You know, there's sort of been stuff lately about John Lennon, you know, dying, and it is really sad. And you just think, if he hadn't died and George hadn't died, they maybe, you know, would have done some other stuff, you know.
It's just crazy. I think when you look at the sort of the time bracket in which the Beatles existed,
yeah,
and how prolific they were within that period of time, and how each record was such a radical progression.
Yeah.
Like from the one previous. Incredible. And I think, I don't know, sometimes I just kind of, almost sounds bad, like forget about the Beatles. And like, and then every now and again, like you say, all that stuff last week about Lennon, I just then went back and was watching a few things, and I was like, oh God, yeah, I forgot about Mind Games. How good's Mind Games? And, and then it was like, I'll stick some Beatles on. And it's just like, oh, it's just ridiculous, the amount of incredible music that they just churned out.
Like, because, you know, like Paul McCartney, as you know, his solo, those early, you know, and the Wings stuff, you know, George Harrison as well, even Ringo. But, you know, it's a sort of shame they split up, you know, really. But, you know, that's what happened. Let it be, man.
Okay, well, I'm going to keep you around the formative years for Track 3. Chris, I'm going to ask you the song that reminds you of your time at school.
They're very difficult, you know.
I should say at this point that I would say that 70% of guests that have been on this podcast have said baggy trousers.
Oh, right. Well, there must be a certain age. Yeah, because it is like, isn't it? I mean, I kind of thought, yeah, there's loads of, you know, stuff. There's like Roxy Music. I mean, I like sort of Deep Purple. You know, I've always had very wide tastes, but I put Gene Genie, David Bowie, 1972. You know, he was just flipping another, you know, genius that, you know, kept, you know, just saying old thing, you know, saying reinventing himself, but, you know, he just kept going, you know, incredible career.
What was that like for a young lad to sort of, to see David Bowie on Top of the Pops or something like that?
Oh, it wasn't like, oh, my God, you know. Because, again, you know, I was quite broad-minded. Because he did The Man Who Sold the World, and on the cover he had long hair and he's wearing a dress. You know, and I mean, you imagine when you're a kid, like, remember someone came to school with it, and I'm like, oh, gee, what, is that, you know, is that a man? You know, and but, you know, I never, you know, in those days, you just didn't think anything nasty. You know, like these days, you know, trans people or whatever, you know, you know, it causes a lot of people, you know, can't stand it. But, you know, it just then, I mean, even when I was at school, you know, we had kids in my class that were obviously gay. And it was just like, so what? They were our gays. They were our, you know, two gay kids. And it's like, you know, they weren't bullied or anything like that, you know. Yeah, but, you know, I don't know, I've sort of gone off on a tangent there, haven't I?
Well, sorry for the interruption, it's just a super quick advert. The Signal is a platform for podcasters to launch a fully featured app onto the App Store and Google Play in just a matter of days. It allows you to monetize your podcast with in-app subscriptions and offer in exchange a whole world of features for your listeners, like exclusive episodes, ad-free versions of episodes, YouTube live streams, downloads, and much, much more. The Signal allows you to pull all your best content into one place that you control. No more trying to play the algorithm. Just connect directly with your audience and give them more of what they love. For just a small monthly cost and no contracts, you get your app into stores in days, not months. No big upfront development costs, no waiting months for beta versions, just all your content under your control. And even better, if you tell them Stu sent you, they will waive the £100 setup fee. So go to thesignal.app and take your podcast to the next level. Back to my podcast. So how did you find school?
It was just down the road. my first school, I could walk there. I went to this really nice school called Gospel Oak. And, you know, I did quite well. You know, this exam called 11 plus. So they said, oh, yeah, you can go to grammar school. Now, there was a grammar school near me called William Ellis that I could walk to. And my parents put me in one called Owens, which is in Islington, which was like, you know, I had to go miles. And, you know, because there was a local comprehensive called Ackenburley that a lot of my friends went to. And I remember, you know, we went round and looked at all these schools, you know. And Ackenburley, they were doing tie-dye, T-shirt. I should have gone there because loads of my mates went there. But I went to this Owen school, which, you know, the some of the teachers had mortar boards and all this game, you know. And, you know, it wasn't that good a school. I'll tell you who went there, Spandau Ballet.
Right.
Their manager was in my class. They were sort of a bit younger than me, you know, Gary and Martin. But it wasn't, you know, it was fantastic. You know, we had, I mean, such a laugh. You know, the stuff, the things we used to get up to, you know, it was all these scams and I won't go into them more. I mean, there was one thing where we got out of this window and there was this back of these houses, you know, and there's all these Coca-Cola bottles and someone went, oh, that's F&O's house. Now, I was a bit naive because the school had different houses called Hermitage House, you know, like groups. And I thought, oh, you know, it must be some upper school thing. But what they meant was there was a shop called Fred and Olive's that was in this upper street, you know, the high street. And it was there, it was the back of their shop. So in those days, which is something they should do now, you could get a deposit on a bottle. When you bought a bottle of Coke, there was like a 1p deposit or something like that, you know. So we got these bottles, went round to the shop and got the money back. Do you know what I mean? And we kept doing this for quite a while. I mean, they must have realised. And, yeah, we got caught, you know, that somebody had them in a locker, hundreds of empty Coke bottles. But anyway, that was the sort of thing we used to get up to. And then when I was, like, 16, which was, during the summer holidays, you know, the summer holidays always seemed to be gone forever. And myself and Lee, as tax player, we were in Hampstead and we saw a shop window and it said gardeners wanted. I don't know why. We thought, oh, well, let's go and get a job as gardener. So I had this job as a gardener working for this firm in Finchley, which was a bit of a way. So the school sort of sent a letter, more or less said, don't come back. And that was it. I was 16 and I had a job. It's funny, like, you know, obviously now, years later, the school say, oh, would you, you know, because I'm a famous ex-pupil, would you care to come back and talk about your time? And I went, you know, you expelled me. You know. but no, I did go to a thing that I went to a thing they did at the Royal Albert Hall. It was really good. It was because the school was 300 years old or something like that. But when, you know, it was in Islington and it moved to Potter's Bar. After I left, and it's quite sad because I used to go back and look at the old building, and I had this band in the 90s with Lee called the Nutty Boys or Crunch.
I saw Nutty Boys, yeah, about 20, yeah, times, mate.
Yeah. We used to play at this place called the Powerhouse in Islington. Did you ever go there?
Saw you there loads of times, yeah, mate.
Because my old school was near there. So, you know, I used to kind of go back, and one day the guy who played piano in the Nutty Boys, Louis, he's really funny. I said, come on, Louis, we're going to have a pint and we're going to see my old school. And it had gone. It was flattened. And that place was, you know, 300 years old. Or 250 years. Well, yeah, it was old. but, yeah, so, you know, it was sort of good times, yeah, obviously.
So did you have any idea what you wanted to be when you was at school?
No, not a clue.
Was you playing guitar?
No. You know, I went to see a careers officer, yeah, and he said I should be a journalist. That's what they said, you know, like this thing now, retrain,
yeah,
I'd be a journalist. So there you have it. But no, I didn't have any musical aspirations, really, you
know. I just want to move forward, like, and a little bit before we come back again to for track four, and it's just, you know, you know, the madness stories. Probably, you know, he's very well documented. I'm sure you've told that story a million and one times. But I'm just interested in that kind of period when you was doing the Nutty Boys. Like, how was that?
When Madness, yeah, because Madness split up, and Suggs didn't really, you know, really, you know, in retrospect, I should have really tried to. Yeah, we did that thing, The Madness, didn't we? That's right. You know, which wasn't... It was some songs that we'd been doing as Madness, and it was like... There's some good stuff on it.
I Pronounce You is a wonderful record.
Yeah, that was really good, yeah. But that's right, we'd done that, and then we were starting to do some more stuff, and it's just like, you know... Went our separate ways, you know. So I said, Lee, you know, should we do some songs? So me and Lee did these demos. Yeah, we went and we paid to get them, you know, because Madness had a studio. We went and did these songs and we went around a load of record companies, you know, and there was one guy, yeah, he really liked us. And we just thought, oh, you know, we'll go on holiday and we'll get a deal, you know. And Lee used to go, you know, on teletext, you know, on your telly, and he's always looking up holidays. And he found his holiday in Lanzarote, I remember. And we went there and we came back, but I mean, nothing was really happening, you know. And then a guy that Lee knew, by then there was these kind of like third generation of ska bands, And there was a friend of Lee's called Sean Flowerdew, who I still talk to quite a lot. And he had a band called The Loafers. And he went, oh, if you go, I'm on his record label and, you know, they'll give you some money to do an album. So we wrote that, you know, crunch album and recorded it in the old Madness. And we did it, like, really quick. We used, I think, one of the demos, Always the Innocent. We used that, but we changed the drums. So, yeah, we put the album out and then, you know, and it kind of did all right. And then we thought, well, maybe we'll start a band, you know. So, you know, we got I remember thinking, right, I want to be like the Small Faces and we'll all be really short, you know. Like, and we kind of started to, a sax player was quite tall.
Sexy Steve was a tall man.
Yeah, I don't know what happened to him, but yeah, so it was. And I remember like Louis, the piano player, you know, he's a real character. I knew a guy called Seamus, and Seamus had played with the Madness a bit. You know, he played organ. And he played with Madness after Mike left. We had two keyboard players, which was him and a guy called Terry Disley. And Terry Disley went to school with me. It's quite funny. And Terry did piano, Seamus did organ. So when I started this band, you know, like sometime, a long time after that, I still used to talk to Seamus, and I went, Seamus, I'm starting a band, you know, do you want to kind of join? So he joined, and then he knew Louis. Do you know what I mean? He was all like, and then someone at a record company knew Tad, you know, I think the bass player, and Tad knew Spider, the drummer, and Lee knew, you know, we knew Sexy Steve, we'd known since we were kids. So, yeah, that's how that happened.
How did that, you know, how was them, you know, the years of doing that, like from obviously playing, yeah, you know, huge, yeah, gigs with Madness to kind of, you know, going back on the kind of, you know, the breaking circuit again? Did it feel nice sort of getting back in a van and you know, and having a crack at it again?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think, you know, some of the times that we had doing that were the best times, you know, there was just such a laugh. And I was like, you know, I was kind of on like income support. And I had my son living with me, you know, who was, I don't know how old he was then. Yeah, he was living with me. So, you know, I was kind of just about surviving. And, you know, I had this little big overdraft. And that, but, yeah, you know, I was living by the skin of my teeth. But, yeah, I mean, we had some adventures and, you know, it was often chaos. You know, things would go wrong. But, you know, it was a very enjoyable time, you know.
Okay, I'm gonna just gonna go back a little bit now and just ask you what the first record you remember buying was.
I had to really think about this, you know, because I thought it was the Beatles. She's a Woman. You know, I do remember that, but you know, I sort of looked it up and I was about eight. Sort of like, you know, where is it? She's a Woman, the Beatles. She's a Woman. Sorry, the Beatles, a song by the Beatles. Oh, God, it's all gone. Guitar chords. I remember having that, yeah, having that single. And let's see, 1964. So I was eight. I was eight, you know, and I know we had that single. And the other, I don't know which one was the A side. There's a song called I Feel Fine. And that had a good beginning. The guitar sort of going, yeah. But anyway, the first one that I bought was 1969. And it's called The Vampire by The Upsetters. And it is an instrumental. And I used to go to this club. I sort of think, you know, because I was skinnier, then I had long hair, you know. I remember going to this club and hearing it, and you could go to, like, there's a little record shop in Kent Town, and you could just get anything, you know. And there's an organ solo, and even then, there's one bit where he does a tune note, and you can tell. But it's that, yeah, it says The Upsetters, and then the other side is called Check Him Out by The Bleachers. It's like Lee Perry. It's,
yeah,
Lee Perry kind of thing, you know. Yeah.
I mean, over the years, like, how important, you know, have record shops been to you?
I have to say, you know, to my shame, you know, they were. But, you know, now you just go on flipping Amazon, didn't you? And, like, I think lately, thought, right, you know, if there's something I want to get, there's an HMV and there's independent record shops in Brighton, I'll go there and get it, and then I'll do. You know, rather than that, you know, Amazon, oh, yeah, look, it'll be here tomorrow and it only costs, you know. You've got to support these people, really.
Absolutely. You know? There's some great record shops in Brighton, isn't there?
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's move forward a little bit for track five and the song that soundtracked your year's clubbing.
I mean, again, there's so many.
You can have some honourable mentions, mate.
Hey, honourable mentions?
Yeah, you can throw some others in there.
I like Run DMC, flipping, you know, King of Rock. You know, we all like Run DMC. In fact, the cover of their album, you know, that's the Crunch album. You know, there's me and Lee in my head. Yeah, I copied that from Run DMC. It's one of the, I think, the King of Rock album.
Yeah,
it's got them on the cover like that. But there's that. But I mean, Run DMC. Yeah, they were. It's like we used to go to clubs in America, you know, or anywhere, and they'd always, you know, you go in a club, the band, and they'd put on a Madness record. We go, no. I remember you got King of Rock put on once. And we were all going nuts. This club had a kind of, it's King of Rock, Run DMC, that's the one. This club had a sort of ball pit in or something.
A ball pit?
I remember jumping in this thing like a sort of trampoline to King of Rock. But I mean, what I put was Last Night a DJ Saved My Life.
Oh, what a great record.
That's 1982. Because that's one song, you know, I mean, I don't like dance. But I always get, you know, on the old, you know, floor, actually, but there's so many, you know.
So, you know, I guess 82 was like the kind of, you know, a very much, I would imagine, a very exciting time for Madness. So, where was clubbing then? Where was you going?
Again, I might have to look this up. I mean, I used to go to Dingwalls, to the Camden Palace, because I sort of befriended Steve Strange. Yeah, you know, and he was the right character. I mean, I don't know when that was, though, the Camden, because it's now called Coco. It was known as the Camden Palace from 82. That's there. And the Wag Club, which was in, you know,
Wardour Street.
Yeah. I spent a lot of time there. Again, I don't know.
So what was going on? Like, what was Steve Strange doing in 82 at Palais? Was New Romantic still going on then? Was that?
I don't know. I mean, it's like I was going out with Jenny from the Bell Stars, and she knew him. She knew all these sort of people, you know. And you know, I was like, oh, she's poncy. we went to the, you know, because we lived near the Camden Palace. We went there, you know, and then I met him. And then me and I started talking about shoplifting. And I thought, oh, he's a kid. Yeah, because he was a character, Steve, you know. He was a real character, you know, and I liked him a lot. And so, you know, you'd go there and you'd meet all sorts of people because they had this sort of bar at the top, you know, that was a bit elitist, I suppose. But, you know, and they used to, I think he got Run DMC on at the Camden Palace, and I think it was like one of the first things they did, you know.
Was you there for that?
Yeah. I might be wrong if it was the Run DMC, Camden Palace. You know, I mean, it's sort of hard to find a building from Run DMC, Public Enemy.
That was Hammersmith, the Run DMC Public Enemy, and...
Oh, that, yeah. So I was just reading... I took Lee, because Lee, he said, we all say it to him, oh, rap is a fad. I said, Lee, you know, Two Tone was a fad. You know, rap's not sort of changed a lot, hasn't it? But I took him, to Run DMC... Beastie Boys, Public Enemy, LL Cool J.
Yeah.
They were all on the Hammersmith Odeon. And the guy that promoted it, he used to promote Madness. He's a great guy, John Curd. He really helped us when we started. But it's like, he went to me and Leo, it's a bit leery in there. You know, he just chucked us. And in the middle of it all, yeah, we weren't kind of, you know, in the VIP bar or backstage. And, you know, Lee was like, oh, my God. But it was really great show, you know, great show. LL Cool J came down on a giant ghetto blaster. I mean, it was massive. Came down, and it, you know, and it opened. And you never forget. There's no bloody mobile phones. You just remember these things.
Yeah.
You know. And, yeah, and he had two scratches. It was just like, yeah, incredible. Yeah. Great days. Sorry, yeah. Mm.
For track six, I'm going to ask you a favourite song from an artist from your home county, please.
Yeah, you said home county. And I thought, I live in Brighton. But I've got the Kinks.
Nice.
Lola. You know, because they're from Muswell Hill, which wasn't, you know, far from where I lived. We used to hang around there a bit because Mike Barson ended up living near Muswell Hill. And again, you know, actually, it's another song that's a story, isn't it? And a very interesting story too.
Yeah, completely.
Ray Davies is another genius, you know, absolute genius, you know.
But I think, you know, I've said it on this podcast countless times to people when they've referenced Madness, and I'm not just saying this because you're sitting opposite me, but you know, I think that, you know, the stuff that, and the subject matters and the kind of social commentary that the Kinks were singing about then, I think that Madness done that fantastically.
Yeah, you know? It's funny, you know, I mean, we never thought, oh, we'd do a Kink song, but I remember I wrote a song with Suggs called Ernie, and Suggs, it's about a premium bond machine, you know, or your premium bonds. I remember, you know, Clive, our producer, he went, this is really like the Kinks. And I thought, yeah. Because at that time, you know, I was obviously remembered the Kinks. But it's only, you know, in more recent times, I'm just always buying Kinks albums. You're always finding these albums, all these, you know, old ones, you know, all these songs you've never heard, you know. I mean, if anyone's got the time, that Waterloo Sunset, there's, you know, on YouTube or somewhere, there's a kind of backing track of them doing it. Do you know what I mean? I think it hasn't got the vocal, and it's incredible, you know, that they were so good, you know, the Kinks, yeah.
Well, for the last song, Chris, I'm going to ask you for a song that many may not know, that you would like them to hear. So it's when you get to turn them on to something new.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, yeah, I didn't, you know, there was loads I could have thought of. I just thought something I've been listening to recently that I think it was on a TV show, you know, and you get the old Shazam out on your phone, you know, and it's Leslie Gore, and there's this song called, you know, You Don't Own Me, which came out in 96. I don't remember it from when I'm a kid, you know, but, yeah, You Don't Know Me, it's just, I don't know.
What is it? What's it like? I've not heard that.
You'd have to look it up, won't you, Stu? It's kind of like, it's like a Leslie Gore song, you know, it's almost like doo-wop, but when I looked, it was produced by Quincy Jones, and he's been, you know, more than a legend, isn't he, Quincy Jones? Yeah, it's, you know, You Don't Own Me. It's just hilarious. It makes me laugh at the moment. It cheers me up. You know, put it on and...
Well, I guess if we're going to be, you know, let's stay positive here and hope that, yeah, you know, as we get to the end of the year, we find ourselves, you know, coming out of it in a better way than, you know, it's been, yeah, the most of it. What are you looking forward to most, Chris, about, you know, a kind of a return to reality, and what are you looking forward to personally, and what are you looking forward to, and what have you got coming up professionally?
Professionally, Well, I mean, I look forward, I would say going down the pub, but I don't really go to the pub much. But, would be nice, because the pub that I go to in Brighton, the fantastic Dorset Bar, if anyone's ever down here, it's great. You know, and it's terrible, because Marty only has had to put these screens and you have to walk in this way. You know what I mean? You can't even go to the bar and order a drink. And it would be nice to, to go in there under normal circumstances. It's obviously the band is peculiar because I go through these phases. You know, we are incredibly lucky that people still like us, and we live, we're probably bigger than we were in the 80s, we do arenas. But, last year I was thinking, I've had enough of this. And then the manager was going, do you want to do a tour this year? And I'm like, yeah, all right. And it's kind of like...
But are you all like that, though, Chris?
I don't know. It's hard to explain, because I just think, I won't miss it. And in some ways I haven't missed it. And then you sort of do miss it, And we are actually going to start rehearsing next week, and we're going to do one of those streaming things, hopefully.
Yeah.
There's been a few hiccups with that. But, so I think, it would be good for us all to get in a room, because that's it with us. Once we do that and it's just us, you kind of realise, you missed everyone, Because some of the band, Suggs, I hardly spoken to him. I'll tell you something funny. I sent him a song, and it was a sort of not a finished song. And he's very matey with Paul Weller. So he goes to me, I sent Paul Weller a load of songs. I don't know why. I think they send each other songs. And he says, well, I really like your one. And I went, no, it was for us, He says, well, don't get angry. I was like, no. So then the next thing, he goes, Weller's just like done some lyrics. And I was like, right, so he sent it to me and it's really good. And so I said, you better give me his number, So I said, all right, Paul, you should 50-50. He said, yeah. So I've written a song with Paul Weller.
Without realising you was writing a song with Paul Weller.
And like I say, it was like I was saying earlier, it was like something I did on the old computer. But, Weller's like redone it and he's a genius, really, yeah. Paul Weller. Really, he's sort of one person that he put an album out and I hear a single, I just go and get the album,
yeah.
He's very... and he's like, I've known him a long time, but I don't really talk to him much. And he's very like, oh, yeah, what, mate? But actually, he's a very intelligent guy. Yeah. I think, his lyrics are good. His last album, Lee played sax on it.
Oh, did he?
And there's a track called I'm Walking, and Lee went and played some sax on it. But yeah, I like him. He's a good,
Have you seen? I've got an episode of this coming out tomorrow with Mick Talbot.
He's funny, isn't he, Mick?
Oh, he was great.
He's a funny guy. Yeah.
And have you seen the documentary comes out on the 30th?
No, I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, it looks really good. Saw the trailer for it last week, and looking forward to that.
I like the Style Council. That was a great songs. I think Paul Weller, he did this kind of house album.
Yeah.
And I think Polydor went, and I think they dropped him. And I thought, just because of one, and then he slowly came back and, he's now in, I think, funny enough, he's back on Polydor. But, record companies is another thing. It's like record shops. There used to be all these companies, and then get swallowed up by the sort of, there's only about two, which is all right. Some of them, they let them stay the same.
Yeah.
It's like, when I think it was Pizza Express, might not have been, they got bought out, and then I think the guy try to, yeah, because they just, I don't know, we won't have real flowers, we'll have plastic flowers. They get the bean counters in to try and maximise profit, and you take away the things.
You take the soul out of it.
Yeah, you know.
Well, before we finish, I just want to ask you this, because I interviewed Bedders about a year ago on this podcast, and yeah. and I was just fascinated, because I was you know, lucky enough to be in the crowd for it. How did it feel the moment before you walked out on stage for Madstock, and how did it feel when you walked off?
It was funny, because I'm like very contrary, you know, and you know, when that, I thought we're never gonna, you know, we're never, that'll never happen. And you know, I was doing the thing with Lee, and I was quite happy, and I was like, Lee, you know, we shouldn't do it. Didn't want to do it. Then I wanted us to be on the bill.
Why didn't you want to
do it? I didn't want to do it, because I just thought, I don't know, I thought, oh, it's a bit of a sellout, you know. It's kind of like...
But you wanted the Natty Boys to play on the bill, though.
Yeah, then they wouldn't do that, of course. Yeah. It sucks it all. Everyone will get confused. I thought, I don't think so. But it's sort of like, I thought... it would have been nicer if we'd have all just said, hey, let's get the band, you know, rather than for money. And I could see it coming, because I was still quite involved in the band's activities. And there's a record company called Pickwick. You know, remember Pickwick? And Pickwick wanted to do a compilation album called It's Madness. And no, I was interested. And I went to meet Pickwick, and I helped them compile it. And, you know, I mean, the artwork was terrible. I did the best I could. And they put this album out. And the album was only sold in garages, things like that. But it sold like, you know, it sold a lot. So then they did another one. And then Virgin said, we want to do Divine Madness, right? And, yeah, we did a TV advert. Like, Carl had ideas for the TV advert. And suddenly, you know, that It Must Be Love got back, and you know, it went mental. And Vince Power knew Carl and Suggs, and he said, look, I'll do this thing, you know. So that's how we came to do it anyway. So I was all like, oh, I don't want to. And we, of course, did it. And it was, you know, incredible. It was incredible. You know, we'd never played on our own. It was something like 32,000 people a night. And, you know, yeah, it was quite, you know. And I said, that's right. I said, what we need, you know, we rehearsed and rehearsed. I said, what we need to do? I said, we go to Holland, because Mike was living in Holland. And I said, we'll rehearse there. And we found this little venue in Holland, and we rehearsed in Holland. And I remember him going, well, it's not very near where I live. I thought, oh, Jesus, Mike. We played in this, because I said, we need to play it at least once before we do Trinity Park. And we played in this venue, and a mate of mine bought a video, and he videoed it, but the sound was terrible, and he's lost the video. So there you go. But and I thought it was great. And then, like, we had a guy looking after us, you know, manager, Steve Finan. A very smart guy, very young. And next thing was, oh, do you want to do a Christmas tour? I said, right. I'm not, you know, because I thought, I don't want to be stuck on this, you know, greatest hits merry-go-round for the rest of my life. I said, you know, I don't want to do it. And they just went, all right, well, we'll say that you've hurt your arm. And I thought, oh, I'll do it, you know. And then I did it, and then the rest is history. You know, we, you know, changed our... I mean, we used to do them every other year. We did that for quite a long time. And then we got a new management team who were much more proactive in getting us doing more stuff. So now, yeah, you know, well, this year we would have had a very busy year. Very busy year. You know, we go around Europe doing festivals. Yeah. It's just, you know, on my phone, I get this thing on my, they're all on my calendar, the shows. You know, and it's all Paris, Belgium. You know, let's see if there's anything on there. Podcast today. Oh, with you. Well, we would have been doing Butlins next month, you know, which is always a laugh. Yeah, so where was I? Yeah.
So you miss him playing?
Well, like I say, you know, I'm so contrary. Like sometimes I think, oh, well, I don't miss it. You know, and I always think I don't, and then I do it, and then I think, oh, yeah, you know. Because every show, there's something. There's something, you know, because obviously if you're doing it again and again and again and playing baggy trousers and you're like 60, you know, but you see, we do see, you know, a lot of young people. We see, you know, it's people's children, and even, I think, dare say, grandchildren are coming to see us. Or, you know, I do a thing on the website and people send me, you know, questions. And you get a lot of people that really go, I went in the loft and I found my dad's CDs, you know, and they discover us. Because you think kids today, seriously, what have they got? You know, and like we're quite fun, you know, and the video's quite funny. So, yeah, it's quite funny, quite strange.
Chris, it's been a real pleasure.
Yeah, it's been nice to you. Yeah.
Chatting records with you, mate. Yeah, I wish you all the best with whatever comes from 2021. And you,
mate.
And I look forward to seeing Madness again soon. Take
it in touch. I'll be on the guest list. I will. Where do you live?
There you go. Chris Foreman. Amazing. It's always a weird one. You know, you always have to kind of rein it in when it's somebody who has, whose music has been so important in your life. You try not to fan out so much and but I also have so many questions that I want to ask. And so it was really nice to be able to kind of talk about, you know, the Nutty Boys and not so much Madness, you know, it's just to kind of find out, you know, what happened post and, you know, in that kind of hiatus. So it was lovely to kind of get to chat about that. And I hope you got as much enjoyment listening as I did chatting to Chris. Like I said at the beginning, if you enjoyed that, go and have a rummage in the archives and listen to some episodes. You know, there's stacks. I'm not going to start rattling them off, but all your favourite musicians, producers, DJs, actors, comedians, I've chatted to a fair old bundle of them now. So go and have a rummage in the archives and see what you can find. There'll be something there to tickle your fancy. Right, okay, I'm out of here. Thanks once again to Chris. Thanks to you lovely people for listening. And I'm back next time. Take care. Bye-bye.
It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.